Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Say What Author Spotlight, a division of Say What Book Club. I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane, and each month we bring you the featured author of the book we're currently reading. Today's author is Miriam Kelly Ferguson, and we'll be discussing her novel, Weaver. Miriam, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. So we'll go ahead and jump right on in. Why don't you tell us about Weaver in your own words?
Okay, Weaver was actually a labor of love in that my experiences with my grandmother, I was born in Talbot County, Maryland, and my experiences with my grandmother in her last years was she introduced me to making potholders. I mean, have you ever, like, had a loom where you made potholders as a child? And she would...
No, I had
she would have,
I've seen them.
Yes. And she would have me make these potholders, and then she would weave them together into bath mats, the front door mat.
Uh-huh.
And therefore...
Okay.
And therefore we called ourselves weavers.
Okay.
And also, area, they have artisans, thrift shows that you go to.
Mm-hmm.
And they always had cows on them. They always had cows. And this one lady had trees and people and things. But she was peculiar. And that's where Weaver initiated from my imagination and my life in Talbot County, Maryland.
Okay. So I've had a chance to read this story, and my goodness, from the opening line to the last, I was just totally engrossed in this story. Such a great book. If you guys have not read Weaver, you'll want to add that one to your to-read list for sure. So why don't you tell us, what was your motivation for writing it?
I didn't really set out with the motive. I didn't really set out for a reason to write it, but I knew I wanted an overcomer.
Okay.
And it appeared to me that this lady had surpassed cows. She had gone to a place with problems, with a poor understanding. But she was able to put her true feelings into what was her work, you know.
Okay.
And I believe that, if you do, and if you're still and with persistence, you can overcome anything.
Absolutely.
So that's how it started. And then when you sit down and just begin to what if? And Weaver does touch upon some very tragic incidences.
Yes, so, it did.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so relatable. I don't like to give spoilers, so you know, I won't delve into any of the specifics. But such an emotionally charged read, you know. And your main character, Almina, you know, she was someone that. You know, she's someone that I feel people would grow up knowing. You know, there's someone in their life who has, you know, who has Almina tendencies, or who has experienced some of the things that she has gone through and has been ostracized as she has, you know, and yet continue to, you know, to press on, you know. And so she's a very relatable character. Would you say that you write mostly for entertainment, or do you write to share a message with your readers?
You know, I didn't think so. I thought I was writing for entertainment. But I think that there's a message behind the madness that I create. And I was glad in it. Even though when I named characters, I didn't realize it took me about half I had finished maybe three quarters of the book before in a workshop I was alerted. They said, "Did you know what the names of the twins are? Grace and Glory."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I said, "Oh my goodness!" Before I realized that I was doing that, and as I say, it all worked out. It all worked out. I wasn't one of those writers that knew early on they were to be a writer. I knew I was a storyteller, but I didn't come to writing, say, at the age of 10 or 11. Or, you know, I think because, you know, I was one of those kids that talked so much in class that you were sent to the corner.
Uh-huh.
So to entertain myself, I told stories.
Oh, okay. Okay. So how did you come into writing then?
I came into writing.
Tell us about your journey.
Really late, I would say late. No one really wants to sit down and hear you go through this what if and what if, and you're making it all up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a paralegal for almost 20 years, and we deal in fact. A lot of it is fiction when you're using personal injury. But after it slowed down and my family, and I would make up little tales for my daughter not to feel bad. She was a track star and that, you know, athletes lose races, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always telling her something to make her feel better. But, and then this is how I always start a process of what if, what if.
Mm-hmm.
And, and this is how Weaver came to be. What if?
Okay. All right.
And I journeyed that I mentioned in Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
I journeyed there to see if I could just get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So are you prepared to read an excerpt for us?
I sure am. What I'm going to read today is one of the Weaver's neighbors. Okay, that's chapter 3. All right. It starts off, Coralie Jackson is my name. I'm the baby girl of the plump, good-looking, and statuesque Jackson girl. There have been three of us, Mary, Bernice, and me. We were born in Maryland, but our mother moved when she was young to Mississippi. Mom wanted to be a blues singer. That never did happen. The closest she came was having three daughters by three different lowly talented men. Folks call us brick house mamas. I never did like that name. On the other hand, my sisters loved it. They would smile and twirl their behinds more at the mentions of this name. I'm the biggest of mama's girls. I got big arms, big legs, and big breasts. Hey, being shapely in the South was in style, so I caught all the young men's eyes. The last time I saw either one of them, I was down home at my grandmother's funeral, and like all homegoings, it ended in a big fight. Mama had died 2 years before this from much too much to drink. I guess she really did have the blues. I would give anything to see my sisters now. But it's a shame somebody always has to die before you see each other. Now, here we are, leaving Mississippi in the middle of the night. I can hear the sirens coming towards our house on South Point Road. Police was always around our way, except when you needed them. Malcolm Jaw is set in a tight clinch. And any wrong move would bring a lightning backhand slap. The thought of it makes me cringe. That, with his 357 Magnum next to him on the front seat. But you say, who is Malcolm? He's my husband. Or better yet, a very good friend of Satan. In the back seat is the air I breathe, my children. We've been driving for more than 4 hours from one small dirt road to another, creeping along at just under the speed limit. And although it's dark, you can still see a great deal of shadowy forms, dense woods, big trees, and hills reaching to the sky. Night was the time I dreaded most. We had loaded up our life in the old rusted-out station wagon. The car now turns on Route 301, heading north. Ooh, girl, my bladder is screaming. Just when I thought I was about to explode, Malcolm pulls off to the side of the road. Me and the children jump out of the car to relieve ourselves. Well, it sounded like a heavy rainstorm. I begin to laugh at the five of us coming out of the bushes. You know, laughter can hide your fears. I need to show no fear. Malcolm's jaw had relaxed a little, but his tongue was still close and still just as big. Once we got back in the car, out of weariness came semi-sleep and drifting off into memories of what was behind and how life with Malcolm had gone so wrong. Scenes of the last 7 years flashed in my head. You know, I would do anything for my children. I was a lone woman with two grown boys working 12 hours a day in a nursing home. You know, I paid the bills. I mean, if I juggled it right, I didn't need no man. But the day I seen Malcolm at the gas station, I lost my head and my heart. He entered the scene with a bang. He was tall and husky with jet black hair and dark eyes that always dance. His skin was moist looking and he smiled a lot. Everything about Malcolm was good back then. He was my Nat King Cole. I mean, he took my boys to ball games, barbecues, and that made them happy. My boys had never had a father. I thought Malcolm was perfect for the job. Lord knows my boys, Melvin and Percy, sure needed one. Malcolm understands the needs. He enrolled them in the boys' club, and every other weekend the boys went camping or hiking. You know, time for them to do manly things, stuff I couldn't teach them. After 2 months of I love yous and tongue kisses and fancy dinners and long walks, it was time to test the waters. See, the boys was away. I knew it was time because Malcolm had that, it was starting to get that pleading look on his face. Tell the truth about the matter, I was ready to. Child, I had the Avon lady bring me a big bottle of rose water bath salt. And that Friday night, I laid out in the tub, planning how I would rock this man right to sleep. Stepping my big ass into a red short sack and gown, I called Malcolm at work, told him to pick up some dinner, because the only thing cooking over here was me. Because he got there so fast, I thought he quit his job. Malcolm started at the heels of my feet, sucking and licking them like they was neck bones. His hands ran up and down my legs, stopping every now and once in a while to massage the top of my thighs. The man started munching on me clear up to my breast, and by that time I was whimpering, hallelujah. Girl, his tongue was precious. I grasped the sheet and mashed it and pleaded for him to never stop. By the time we got really ready, I had sung Come All Ye Faithful many a times. Malcolm took his time, and he did me till I was done. Lord have mercy, by the end of that, I had pulled stuffing out the mattress. That following Monday, me and Malcolm stood before the justice of the peace. And 9 months later came the twins, little girls. I named them Grace and Glory. People would stop me on the street just to see the beauty of my babies. I was so thankful, or more like grateful, because it's a wonder I didn't have a litter in the way we was going at it. 18 months later, things got messed up. Malcolm got injured on the job. You see, a tire jack hit him in the face and took off half his jaw. His Nat King Cole profile was replaced with a sunken hole of a scar that had keloid. Having half a jaw made it hard for him to keep his mouth closed, and even harder to keep saliva from oozing out. He became so ashamed of his face that the Malcolm I knew disappeared into a shell like a turtle. He poked around the house. Something died in him the day his face was crushed. It would be alive if it said it didn't make a difference to me. Sometimes I couldn't even look at him directly in the face. Ooh, child, he needed to wear a bib or something. Lord, he was a juicy, frightful sight. And the light had gone out of his eyes, too. And most days I ignored him. Then the fight started. The girls cried too much, it was a fight. If the girls took too much of my time, it was a fight. The fights got more and more vicious. Like the last one we had, when it was over, I had a broken nose and two cracked ribs. Malcolm beat me that time until he was tired. I can't say that I was an angel, because sometimes I was the one who started the fussing, wishing he would leave us. But after the fights, he would always cry and beg me, saying he didn't mean it. Most of the time he'd tell me he'd kill me if I ever left him. I took that to mean that he really loved me. Oh, I know. I should have been left him. But your heart say one thing and your mind say another. The beatings were bad, but there are some beatings that people give you that are worse. It's not with the hands, but with shame that destroys your very core. Women can be so stupid. Well, I got to sink to this mess. And if it's up to me, I'm going to get him out. Get us out. Going over a set of railroad tracks, it both startles and interrupts my thoughts. I want to ask them where we're going, but silence is safer. You see, I didn't want my children to know this really wasn't a planned trip. Or that their father has said he'd blow our heads off if we didn't go with him. The look on his disfigured face told me he meant every single word of it. Turning to look at my children in the back two seats, I can see they're all covered up with the blankets I had given them. Patience. That's what my pastor used to preach on. Core, have a little patience. Of course, my pastor didn't know what hell I was going through. Nobody knew. I had no choice but to patiently wait on Malcolm to leave us alone, because that's a big gun. And Malcolm is sick in the head. And no amount of love or patience can cure that. I must have fallen asleep, because when I awoke, we was in front of my grandmother's old house in Uptown, Maryland. The way I was feeling was strange, like familiar, but lost. I walked the children and said, "We home." This was my old family home. And we was going to make it ours without any trouble. No troubles, we just left. We was in the country, and that's for sure. Nobody was out here. We started to move our stuff in right away. It looked like all the houses was empty. But across the field, I did see some clothes hanging on the line to dry. We had to take down the boards off the window, and to my relief, it ain't that bad on the inside. Now, Melvin, my oldest, he's a good cleaner. He was always tidy, even as a small child. I hate to admit it, but he favors a woman in many ways. But it don't matter, because I know once he finds the right girl, it'll all fall in place. I got a big monster in the bleach, and we went right to work, scrubbing from the front porch to the back bedrooms. Percy, the smell of the boy, found an old rusted lawnmower, and he cleaned it up so we could cut down the overgrown weeds. My girls was running around choosing their bed. Now, Malcolm looked more studier than he had in months. Lord, I wish he'd just disappear, drooling everywhere. I'm going to keep my mouth shut, though. No need to fight tonight. I stay on my mama. It's impossible for me to ever love this man again. First chance I get, we gonna run. Look at him, standing over there just taking up space. And that's the beginning of CORE.
Oh, I love the story. Okay. So if you are just tuning in, this is Say What Author Spotlights, and I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane. And our special guest today is author Miriam Kelly Ferguson, who is just reading from her debut novel, Weaver. If you have not read that book, you'll definitely want to add that one to your reading list. And it's an excellent read. So as I was reading the story, I could see the characters and the scenes play out so clearly. There was such believability with your story. What would you say is the key to writing believable and relatable characters?
Ask yourself the possibility first of this, and research. And I believe reading aloud to yourself, mm-hmm. and answering yourself in the dialogue, and in where you want to go. Of course, you don't really, a lot of writers don't know where they're going, and that's a good thing because you allow the characters to tell the story rather than you telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying that reading what you've wrote to yourself and saying, what if and can this happen, or where am I going or think I'm going? And a lot of times I say to my characters, don't dress this up. Do not dress this up. Be for real. And that's what makes your characters alive and well and believable. Weaver is an emotional read. It takes you from one thing to another. The emotions are always intact, but I allow you to exhale trying times of it. Like there's one incident where she has a run-in with a city official coming by for a heart checkup, which is actually humorous, but it shows her naive ability there, you know? But you get a break from the just awful things that she comes. The conflict is so heavy.
Yes.
And all of that lends to a character being believable.
Okay. Would you say there's a general theme present in your writing? And I realize that this is your first novel, but this is not your first writing. So would you say that there's a general theme present?
I think so. I take conflict and put it in a sense that I'm working on a piece now that has to do with abortion. And so there is the challenges that I write about are timely. They're right now, you know. And I don't like to say I'm stuck in that, but I want to explore how a person can get into such fixes, come out of them or not come out of them. And it works for me that way.
Okay. All right, well, let's just take a quick break here and hear a word from our sponsor.
Okay.
Scores of authors from across the nation will autograph books on Saturday, April 30th at the 7th Annual Dayton Book Expo. In addition to book signings, the Ohio-based event includes sessions for aspiring authors, a kids' zone, and a free journal for book lovers. For details, call 888-802-1802 or visit DaytonBookExpo.com. Dayton Book Expo, where book lovers connect.
If you're just tuning in, this is Say What Author Spotlights, and I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane. Today, our special guest is author Miriam Kelly Ferguson, and she is discussing her novel, Weaver. So, Miriam, why don't you tell us, what genres do you currently write?
They say they put me into women's fiction, and okay. I'll accept that, and I'll accept that. Because I haven't really delved into, I have a couple of men main characters in Weaver. But I was having difficulty seeing it from their perspective, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I will go with women's fiction right about now.
Okay. That's interesting. I thought you were more of a literary fiction writer. But okay.
I think so, too. I think so too, but somehow I think of literary as very heavy, you know, very heavy and worldly and stuff like. And I tend to bring it back home. It's kind of country, and I've been described as sort of California Cooper-ish, and I wish. And I totally wish I was, but I like country. I like country.
Mm-hmm.
Although, as I say, my next novel is based in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I had someone describe literary fiction to me as being a fusing of the past and the present, all in one story. So I could kind of see that with... with what you've done with Weaver, you know. And, So are there any other genres that you'd like to try writing in?
No. You know, I thought I wanted science fiction, which would be a total, you know, snafu from where I am now. But creating a world, I got to give it to those writers. They are, you know, their imagination far exceeds mine, you know. But eventually, I think I'll try it. Somewhere down the line, I think I will try it.
Okay. That sounds good. Now, I know that you've been published in a few other places, Harlem World Magazine, and there was something else, the Amsterdam News. What kind of writing were you doing for those publications?
Basically, that was essays. I did one on the benefits of workshops, and I truly do believe in workshops. Weaver was the first workshop, and I think I only had two chapters of Weaver done, and I studied under Marie Helena Smith. She was an author from Antigua. And that was at City College in New York. My second workshop, again, Weaver was about six chapters in, was at Hurston Wright.
Okay.
And each one, and that was with T.R.E. Jones, and each one of them, the workshops propelled me forward, you know. The workshop leader, and it says, you've got something going here. You may not know what you have, but going. Mm-hmm. So that I wrote for Harlem World was on the benefits of workshops. Now, for Hamilton Review, they initially, I submitted the first two chapters of Weaver, and, of course, they were gung-ho about it. And the last one was, I think it was the Amsterdam News.
Okay.
And then I did one for Impact News.
Okay.
And this was way before Still Alice and all of them. And that was on dementia and Alzheimer's. which I had had a personal experience with a member of my family being with.
I see.
So
okay.
some things you pull out of your surroundings and add your fiction to it. So,
okay.
Yeah. And it was those have really been great experiences.
Okay. How would you say your life has changed since becoming an author?
It really hasn't.
Really?
It really hasn't. I mean, not for me per se, because I haven't really been out there as much as I should be. You know,
okay.
I mean, I meet a lot of people, and I'm quite loquacious, as you can tell. And so it really hasn't. I meet a lot, and I have the shirt to offer up. Be careful. You might appear in my next novel. Otherwise than that, I don't think it has changed that much.
Okay.
You know, I'm very observant, and I try to use things in my novel, as you say, that are believable, but most people don't pay attention to, you know, until they say, or a man on the subway that does that same thing, you know. I identify with the public, and maybe that's why it hasn't changed that much, because I'm a very observant person.
Okay. So you said earlier that you were late in coming into writing. So at what point did you know that you wanted to go from writing to being an author? When did that become a goal?
I think when after my daughter finished high school, and I had all these, like, a desk full of short stories that I had wrote. She said, "Ma, why don't you do something with these?" And then after I went, like I said, to my first workshop and was accepted at Hurst and Wright, then I said, "Wow, somebody else likes this, you know." And I just did it as a release or pleasure mode at first.
Yeah.
And maybe 7-8 years ago.
Okay.
7 or 8 years ago, yeah.
So you say you've got a bunch of short stories. Are you thinking that you will compile them into some books? Now, so you mentioned J. California Cooper earlier, and, of course, we know she was known for those short stories, those collections of short stories, really enjoyed her writing as well. So do you think that you'll do something like that, put some of those together? And,
I'm thinking along that lines, to me. I really am thinking along those lines. But I need to kind of hook them into some sequential order.
Gotcha.
Or theme, you know. Okay. And as I say, I write on the fly, you know. So there's no order to my madness, you know. So we'll see.
So you are a member of the esteemed Harlem Writers Guild. How has being a member of that organization helped you on your literary journey?
It is the experience of a lifetime.
Really?
They tell you exactly how they feel, you know, and there's nothing like the truth. You know, you need that, you know. It's not like going somewhere and saying, "Oh, that's really nice. Are you working like," they go, "That will never fly," you know, if you're writing a story about this, that, and the other. Some of them have researched it, they have lived it, and they have a honor and a thing to keep up with. So they're going to tell you the truth. No, that's not happening, you know. You're going to have to work on this a little bit more, you know, but when they get it right, it is so satisfying. When you get it right.
Okay.
I am here.
Oh, okay. Sound like I heard a pause. I thought I maybe lost you there. Okay.
No.
So what would you say has been the hardest part of this literary journey for you?
For me, it is not understanding the promotion and the marketing aspect.
Mm. Yes.
This is,
you know, that
this is, like I said, this is writing has, I write for joy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I did not
mm-hmm.
research the promotion and marketing things that I need, and I'm just coming into it. The help of
mm-hmm.
some people have told me, well, you need this and you need the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm telling you, the market is so saturated that
mm-hmm.
it is imperative for any new author out there to learn about promotion and marketing, especially in
yeah.
the, even in traditional publishing it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So I'm now taking time away from my writing and trying
mm-hmm.
to play catch up on what I need to do to get out there.
You know, it's kind of an interesting thing, and I can relate to that. You know, writers write. That's what we do, you know, and yet
right.
there's this whole completely different, you know, field out there that most of us come in not knowing anything about, and that's the marketing piece, you know. So
yeah.
Unless there's a budget, you know, to hire people to do it for you, you know, we were really, especially for indies, you know, we're just kind of on the cusp learning as we go, you know, but I
right.
have found, and I can say that, you know, even though, like, there is a system and a way that is put in place, you know, to kind of maximize things, that if it's done according to the timelines, it works. Wherever you are, it's okay. You know, so like if you're starting and it's way behind where other people are, it doesn't really matter. You're on your own timetable. Just start where you are. You know, you learn
right.
a little, apply a little bit more. You know, learn a little bit more, apply
yes.
a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, mm-hmm. it's, you know, I think sometimes there is the, and maybe not for everybody, but, you know, sometimes there's the temptation to feel like you have to kind of compete or keep up with what everybody else is doing. But you know what?
Right.
We're all on our own little individual, you know, journey. And so wherever it is that you find yourself on your path is right where you're supposed to be at that time. You know, I tell people writing should be fun. So if it gets to the point that what you're doing is no longer fun, it's time to take a step back, you know. And so
yes.
you know, even as you're writing and learning the marketing piece, it can become very stressful trying to. There's so much stuff out there. You just kind of get inundated, you know. But, you know, just take a piece. And the truth is not everything works for everybody. Not everything works for every genre. You know, so, you know, being able to pinpoint those kinds of things make a difference also. You know, and no two writers are on exactly the same path either. So even when you're getting advice and stuff from people, you know, sometimes you have to step back and say, okay, well, I can see why that works for what your goals are, but that doesn't really work
right.
for what my goals are, you know, so that, you know,
right.
sometimes I think
right.
you have to have that,
and
that
self-talk
because. And
it all takes time. It takes
yes, it does.
Time. It takes time.
Yeah.
And you're going to make mistakes and
mm-hmm.
carry on.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to, you know, get it right the first time. And so I have to,
exactly.
like, tell myself, you know, okay, it took time to learn parts of writing, point of view, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever else goes into what you wanted to say. This also
mm-hmm.
is going to take time. It's a full education you're going to get out there, and you're going to
That's
pay
right.
some different prices, too.
Mm-hmm.
But needless to say, it's all in the love of the writing, and if
mm-hmm.
I want to write, then in yeah. order to be good, there's another facet to it. So promoting
yeah.
and marketing is the most difficult for me right now.
Yeah. Would you say that, what would you say is the easiest part of the journey for you?
For me, it is getting up and getting in the chair. Even if I don't do anything that day, you know,
mm-hmm.
as long as I get in the chair, and that's usually like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. You know?
Oh wow, okay.
And
mm-hmm.
yes, and get
mm-hmm.
there, then I'm half the battle is won.
Gotcha.
I intended to write
even if I did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, I've heard people. Now I'm not quite so disciplined as that. I'm still turning over at 4:30 in the morning, but I have heard people say, you know, just you want to just kind of keep the momentum and stuff going. Don't wait for inspiration. Sometimes you have to create your own. Even
right.
if it's just you just get in there
yes,
and just start just writing. Even if nothing comes, you know, it's okay. Just keep going. So that's a really valid and interesting point that you bring up there. What can we expect mm-hmm. from you next?
What you can expect from me next, as I said, was a piece. It's called, well, the working title now is In Search of Perfection.
Okay.
And it is a...
Great title.
Although the main character has country roots, she is
mm-hmm.
based in East Harlem. And it has
okay.
to do, the central theme is abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And... the decision whether to abort when
mm-hmm.
she has her partner has a gene problem that could potentially create a monster.
Yeah.
Know?
Mm-hmm.
So the conflict is real,
uh-huh.
and I'm how I might best bring this across.
You okay.
know, it's a heavy title, and
mm-hmm.
But I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it, and
okay.
I'm learning from it. Some things that I thought that I felt about, that conflict
mm-hmm.
and the whole thing about parent planhood and stuff that's going on now, I
mm-hmm.
changed my
mm-hmm.
mind.
I mm-hmm.
have actually
interesting.
Changed my mind. So
okay.
I hope everybody enjoys that as well.
When can we expect it?
I'm shooting for November.
Okay.
My piece take long time because
That's
I need
okay.
to make sure that I'm not offending anyone. And
mm-hmm.
if I am, I think maybe I have a good ground to stand on.
Sounds good. Okay. So... if there were one thing that you could change about the literary industry, what would it be?
If there was one what?
One thing that you could change about the literary industry, what would it be? Just looking at it as a whole, you know, what
the polarization of the traditional publishers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think they should give more of us a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Not that their backing means so much anymore.
Right.
But that we're coming out of where self-published and indie authors are gaining some respect, but I don't think they get the respect that they deserve. And this whole star mentality of... because you have a platform that
mm-hmm.
your writing is significant, you know,
mm-hmm.
a
mm-hmm.
Sort of Kardashian
mm-hmm.
tendency that they have, or, you know, because someone has 5 or 6 million followers, they can write.
Mm-hmm.
This is not
mm-hmm.
true, nor
That's
is
true.
Their story worthy of your time. You know,
yes.
Know. Entertainment, even in the literary field, has to be
mm-hmm.
good, you know,
yes.
worthy,
mm-hmm.
thinking about some, just not their views alone. God
yes.
help me help someone think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what
mm-hmm.
I would change, you know.
Okay. Yeah. If you could give one piece of advice to an aspiring author, what would it be?
Study your craft.
Mm-hmm.
Study your craft.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't go out here and say, I'm going to write about the hood or where I come from and this is that and the other. Study
mm-hmm.
your craft. Put your heart into it. You know?
Yeah.
Learn how to get your words into a meaning to other people that don't come from where you come from, that have no idea where you come from, but be able to describe your world in their world.
Very good. That's an excellent point.
And cut. Edit. Like I don't.
Oh, edit.
Edit.
Oh, edit.
Like I don't know.
Yes. And then edit some more, right?
Yes.
So, what are some of your favorite authors or favorite books or combination thereof?
Okay. I am in love with Maurice Condé. When I'm writing, I stick with Walter Mosley because describes his character so good, and it's so off from what I write, you know? And I'm also Barbara Chase Ribot. I get her.
I really get her.
I have studied under Bernice McFadden, so I get her also. And those are my favorites. I'm
all
in
right.
love with your new book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You know I am. When a man loves a woman, a season of change.
Oh.
Listen to her. Listen to her. Great book.
Thank you. I appreciate that. What are some of your interests outside of writing?
Outside of writing, as I said, I was a paralegal for many years, almost 17 to 20 years. So I keep up with a little bit of politics.
Okay.
I'm a volunteer at a hospital right now when I'm and that takes up a little bit of my time. Also, it gives me a lot of character base, too. So otherwise than that, that's just about all I do. The hospital work and keeping abreast of the changes that people go through in the healthcare industry.
So why don't you tell our listeners where they can follow you?
I am finally getting my marketing and promoting self on board. I'm on Facebook, of course. I'm on Twitter. My books are available at BarnesandNobles.com, Amazon.com. I'm on Goodreads. And I intend to, the last half of this year, really step up my marketing and promoting thing, especially since I'm going to have a new book in probably November.
Absolutely. So let me ask this. Okay, so as far as you on being on social media, should they just type in Miriam Kelly Ferguson, or do you use a different name for them to find you?
No. Oh, no. I always use Miriam Kelly Ferguson and attach page to Weaver right now.
Okay.
And on Twitter, I'm at Mir Ferguson 850.
Okay. All right. So do you have any parting words to emerging authors who haven't reached the level of success they thought they might have by now?
Keep trying. Push. Push yourself. You don't, whatever you went through yesterday, that's yesterday. You know, you got to just keep at it. If you want this, want it bad enough for yourself. You got to do this for yourself because there are so many people that say, oh, I sent my work 20 publishers and didn't get accepted. Do it for yourself. And then go the self-published route. And then only after you've researched that also,
just don't jump.
Yes.
I just jump in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You need to research that also. But keep it
mm-hmm.
going, and if you love it, do it.
Okay. That's great advice. Do you have any parting words or anything else you'd like to share?
No, this has been a wonderful interview.
Well, we have reached
the end of
our time.
Get into a gill.
Okay.
Get
okay.
into a gill also.
Mm-hmm.
Hook up
right.
with people like you.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
find
thank
a
you.
Tamika. Find a Tamika who will give you an
okay.
outlet and let you run off at your jaws a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have reached the end of our time here. Thank you so much for joining us today, Miriam. And it has been a thoroughly enjoyable interview. I'm just so glad to have crossed paths with you and your story, and I'm looking forward to the next one and the next one after that and after that. Keep writing. So, but we at Say What Book Club and Author Spotlights wish you continued success on your literary journey. Again, listeners, we have had author Miriam Kelly Ferguson with us today. Be sure to check out her novel, Weaver. If you missed any part of this interview, you can access the archive about 5 minutes after the show airs to hear it in its entirety. This is Tamika Patrice Kane from Say What Author Spotlight signing off, saying join us here every fourth Sunday at 3 p.m. as we interview our favorite authors. The next interview will be Sunday, February 28th, and we'll have Marlon McCoskey with us that day, 3 o'clock. Until next time,
and I enjoyed this.
Oh, thank you. Until next time, live your purpose, encourage someone to be their daily best, and of course, read a good book. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.